Can I make it to the airport in time? Justin, you know, because my flight's at 3:15. Would that be? No, no. Okay, I didn't realize my mic was on. Okay. Okay, I'm going to share something with you guys. I don't think I've ever really, I think I did it one time before. I put a lot of these things I put together, these keynotes I put together, and sometimes they'll go 5-10 years before I even show them to anybody. But this is one of the new ones. And I think, well, all right. Let's see how it works. If it works, great. If it doesn't, then tell me, whatever. Yeah, right, you're guinea pigs, all right. Okay, let's see, some of these lights. Yeah, can we kill some of these lights so we can, yeah, there we go. All right. Everybody see that? Okay, we talk about poverty a lot, and I've done some thinking about this, and of course it's more complicated than this, but here are some basic things that I think we should understand. So the question is then, what drives poverty, okay? And we as deacons have to understand this, okay? Now, the best way I can illustrate it is using, you know, my son's a fireman, so he helped me work this out, all right? So let's talk about a tale of two fires, all right? So there's two fire pits. There's one that's got wood or paper, okay? So now, is it okay if I light an open fire in here? Is that... Okay, all right. Okay, so I'm gonna put a thing up there. Just okay. So there goes the fire. Okay, so how do you put out a wood or paper fire? Well, you pour water on it and it puts out the fire. All right. There you go. Like I said, I do this. You know, I sit on. You know, they delay the flight for 20 minutes. I figure out a new animation I can do. Okay. Okay, so let's take the other fire pit and light it up and see what happens, okay? So there it goes. And, but something happens when we put water on this. Look. Oh, isn't that something? Okay, so why is that? Why did the water make a fire? Because it's a grease fire or a magnesium fire, okay? So you cannot use, you see how I had to smother it? I put the top on it to smother it. That's how I put it out. You can't put it out with water. All right, I hope this doesn't overheat the screen here because it might, let's see. Okay, oh, careful. Oh, gosh, it burned it out. Sorry about that. No. Okay, so you understand that, right? A wood fire, a paper fire, you put water on it, right? And it puts it out, okay. Magnesium or grease fire, you can't put it out with water. All right, so how do people view poverty? Okay, yesterday's simplistic view, pre-1965, this is how we viewed poverty. We said poverty is caused by bad circumstances or bad character. That's what people said back in 65. All right, so then how do you deal with it? What is the manifestation? Bad circumstances, disaster, or bad character, laziness. Okay, that was the general view. People are poor because of bad circumstances or because they're lazy. All right, and so the result then is poverty. All right, the result is poverty. All right, but now how do you deal with poverty according to the pre-1965 view? You deal with poverty with the response should be relief for disaster or apathy toward laziness. Okay, so, you know, you guys who are into the disaster relief, you know, there is, when disaster happens, you know, you bring help. Okay, all right. But if somebody's just lazy, yeah, don't do anything about it. All right, that's the pre-1965 view. So people said, well, you know, we shouldn't recognize, you know, since all value systems have equal weight and all that, we shouldn't talk about laziness. Well, you know, the book of Proverbs talks about laziness, doesn't it? Remember that? Okay. All right, so today's simplistic view, this is what we say. We say all poverty is caused by bad circumstances, period. This is the politically correct view, all right? All right. The manifestation then is oppression or disaster. So you take laziness out of the picture. So it's either caused by oppression or disaster. You hear that today, right? And of course, the response then is, what is it? It's, come on. There you go. Response, seek a cure, right. Relief and or opportunity. Okay? So here's a guy who's down and out. You pay his rent for a couple of months, and then you enroll him in the community college so he can get a better education so he can do better, right? Right? You give him opportunity, right? All right. That's today's simplistic view. Maybe. Okay, it's got some good stuff in it, but it's not. I don't think it's realistic enough. All right. So let's look at the biblical view, a biblical view of what causes poverty, a more realistic biblical view. By the way, watch this. If that second one is true, I forgot about this. You think about, everybody looks back on the war on poverty, as a good thing. Well, yeah, it was good in the minds of the people who put it together. It was well-meaning. But notice the poverty rates in the United States. They were in a nosedive until guess what happens? The war on poverty. And look what happened. Look, trillions of dollars spent. All it did is succeed in stopping the downward dive, the nosedive of poverty. Good night. What happened? What went wrong? Okay. All right. Now, don't get me wrong now. I know that. Yes, we should have a safety net and all that, but the government is not wise in the way it responds to poverty. That's my point. And as deacons, we can be an alternative witness to the country on how to do it right. See, not only are we doing this to benefit the unfortunate quartet, but we're also doing this as a part of not only to discipleship to the unfortunate quartet, but also a discipleship to the society, to government. All right. So let's bring up our more realistic view of what drives poverty. It's three causes that drive poverty. Okay. All right. So our old friend, bad circumstances, right? So how do you, what's the manifestation of that? Okay, oppression and or disaster. Okay, the today's view was correct about that. And how do you deal with that? Okay, the manifestation is fire. That's poverty. Poverty can be the fire. How do you put the fire out? By relief and or opportunity. So if someone's got if it's just a matter of bad circumstances and they got their values together and all that, and the character together, then you throw money at them, they'll recover and do fine. Okay? The problem with the government is that they think that's the only way to do it. You got it? So that strategy that the government uses is great. I remember a number of years ago, I was working in campus ministry with a certain organization, and when it came time to pick a new director of the campus ministry, they went outside the organization and hired a novice Christian who didn't know anything about ministry. He came right out of the motivation business. He didn't know what the heck he was doing, and I've been working on the thing for about 7 years, right? And I developed a pretty good strategy, and I understood the culture of campus. This new guy came in, he says, it just so happens that I was in a time, you know how ministry fluctuates, how the culture changes, and you're off a little, you got to change your approach. Anyway, I was in the middle of one of those. He came in and said, you better get this straightened out in 1 week. I said, what are you talking about, man? It takes a couple of months to figure this thing out and do a job. No, you get it done right now. Because I didn't get it done right then. He fired me, boom, just like that, you know. And so I was pretty bitter, to say the least. And so here I was, no money, no job, no, wasn't expected to be fired, you know. By the way, there were three of us working in the campus ministry. He fired all of us. And within about 6 months, the whole campus ministry collapsed in that organization. Anyway, so I'm scrounging around here. How do I, you know, how do I survive? How do I survive? I tried everything. I didn't know what to do. And we're running out of money. There's nothing in the refrigerator. I said, let me go down to the welfare office and see if they help guys like me. And by that time, I had already agreed to work with InterVarsity, but it was going to be 4 months away before I could start. So I went down there and I said, you guys help people like me? I told them the situation. They said, you mean to tell me you got another job lined up for September? I said, yeah. The lady said, oh, you're the kind of people we love to help. So they gave us 4 months worth of food stamps. And that was it, you know, but at least we had the food stamps. So, by the way, the food stamps lasted us 9 months because I knew, you know, because having to pay money, I got, you know, I got stuff on sale and all the rest of that. Anyway, we recovered, we came back, you know, we did all right. By that time the food stamps ran out, I was in seminary and I was doing, I had employment and all that. But it worked. It worked for us. It worked for us. It was a really, real good helping hand. By the way, let me say this. So when the food stamps ran out, I started feeling like it was a sin to spend real money on food. I said, oh, man, this hurts too much because I got used to that, you know. It was addictive, to say the least. And then I understood how it feels to, you know, if you get on that thing for generations, you can't imagine spending money on food. So it was a great, well-meaning program, but it had the effect of, I wish I had somebody telling me all the time, this is just temporary, you know. Anyway, but, all right. So that's the one thing. Okay, now, let's say there's another cause of poverty, which would be bad character, okay? Bad culture. And when I say bad culture, of course, it's politically incorrect to say a culture is bad. But what I'm saying is that the value system is bad. There's a bad value system. You know, like you could be a Christian and you could run on bad software, right? Does that make sense? You know, okay. So bad culture. All right. So what is the manifestation? Non-achiever value system. I'll explain to you what I mean by the non-achiever system in a minute. But you're operating on a value system which, if you follow it, will not lead to success in this society. Okay? You're following a value system. A non-achiever value system is one that, if you follow it, you will not be successful. And of course, how do you respond to it? The poverty is like fire, right? So it's like a grease fire. So if you put relief and or opportunity on it, that's like putting water on it. It makes it worse. Relief and opportunity will tend to confirm the person in the poverty. Because what you are doing now is you are funding a bad value system. You got it? You understand what I'm saying? So the way you deal with that one is you change the value system. And that's where discipleship comes in. You change the person's value system. You help them to change their value system. Ephesians, 2:24, something like that. Let him who stole steal no more. Let him work with his hands so he can help those in need, right? Does that make sense? So you help the person change their value system. Because if you live by a better value system, you will flourish. Let's call it an achiever value system. Now, an achiever value system is not the ultimate good value system, but it is better than a non-achiever value system. Let's put it that way. All right? If your house is going to flood, it's better for it to flood to a foot than to 8 feet. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes, you still got a flood, but I'd rather only have a foot of water in my house than 8 feet. All right. All right, now there's a third cause of poverty, which is bad character, okay? All right, what's the manifestation? Laziness and or dependency. Okay, dependency is it really messes with your character. All right. So again, that causes poverty, which is like a fire. And what will happen if we try to put in relief and opportunity? What do you think will happen to the fire? That's like water, right? All right, so here comes relief and opportunity, and it flares it up again, right? So, okay. But what you got to do, you got to come up with a different approach. Not that, but you got to end the enablement. Because if you bring in relief and opportunity to somebody whose poverty is caused by bad character, that enables the bad character. All right. So, there you go. Now, which means, you know, diaconal wisdom means that we understand that. We understand that your value system sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes is as much a cause of poverty than as circumstances, all right? And so with some folks, you know, it's like I said, it's like part of discipleship, you know. The thing that we have that gives us an advantage over other people is that we have a transformative message in the gospel. You see, bad character and even bad culture, you know, but more so bad character, there is a transformative element. But we don't think about that because we assume that everybody is an achiever. That's what the government assumes, that everybody's an achiever. So they make up these and why do they assume that? Because the people who come up with these programs are achievers. They see everybody in their own image. They say, oh, you know, this will help. But understand what I'm saying. It's well-meaning, well-intentioned, but naive. And we in the church should be able to teach the society, you know, as our part of our alternative witness, that there's a better way to do this. Yeah, the government gets it right sometimes, you know, so about a third of the people the government throws money at, they recover, they do just fine. But two-thirds don't. And that's why the poverty rate leveled off. When the war on poverty came along, it actually funded bad value system and bad culture. Because if you have a bad character, what you are going to do, you're going to game the system. That's what you're going to do. If I'm thinking in terms of how do I game the system, how do I rip it off, it's right there for me to rip it off. No wonder we got all kinds of, and by the way, you don't have to be penniless to game the system to have bad character. Look at what happened on Wall Street back in 2008. That's I call it Wall Street nihilism. You know, all those business people, they thought that they could take the profits and push the risk off on everybody else. And they game the system. They game the system. And they almost caused the whole economy to collapse. So I'm not just talking about poor people here. But I'm just saying these are the things that drive poverty. This is a universal problem, by the way. All right. But again, what else do we expect? We believe in radical depravity, don't we? And these are manifestations of radical depravity. And the things that the society does not understand, at least American society, they don't understand that. They forget that there is depravity. But we just forget about it. Now I can point out depravity and I say, oh, you people live in Florida. You gotta divest yourself of your Floridaness. It's easy for me to say that, because I live in Tennessee, right? So I'm self-righteous, right? But no, it's not your Floridaness that's the problem, it's your depravity. But if I come at it that way, then I'm also depraved. You see what I'm saying? And now I gotta be as one sinner to another. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. So understand the games that people play sometimes. I'll just throw that out there. One of these days you're gonna hear something. You're gonna say, oh yeah, I remember he told us that. All right. So that's kind of where we are with that. And those are just some thoughts. Some ideas, of course, they need to be refined, and we need to do some other kind of things. Okay, and one other one I want to show you, and then we'll call it a day. By the way, I do want to show you. Let me show you this. All right. So that's the first thing. All right. Now, there's one other thing that I want to share with you. I call this quadrants of ministry. How do we do ministry? I think this might be of help. Okay, all right. So there's four possibilities. You got a vertical axis, righteousness on top, sinfulness on the bottom. You got a horizontal axis, wisdom on the left, foolishness on the right. So you got opposites, right? All right, so how do you, so when you go up, that is the conversion from based on Christ's righteousness. That says conversion there. All right. So if you're going up, you're going toward conversion. But if you go down, you're going toward intractability. That's self-righteousness. Okay. But if you go left, that's in the direction of wisdom. All right. Based on discipleship. If you go right, that is. Degeneration? Yeah, lawlessness. Yeah, degeneration and lawlessness. Oh, yeah, by the way, where's my IV guy? Okay, not IV. What do you call this stuff?
IT.
IT, yeah, okay. All right. I knew it was I something, right? That's one of the advantages of having your computer right there. You can see what's going on, right? Okay, now, what we try to do, what we want to do is when we want to bring people to the kingdom, is this. We want to bring people from the lower right-hand quadrant to the upper right-hand quadrant, but that's our conversion strategy. We think we can get people converted, and we think just as long as we get them converted, they will automatically go from the lower, you know, sinful foolishness to wise righteousness, right? Righteous wisdom, right? Okay. Now, but the question is, does that really happen? I don't think so. In all of our work in the inner city in Chattanooga, we've had many cases where people, a young lady would come to our Bible clubs that we run, you know, and she receives Jesus and is very happy and loves him and all that. She's 8 years old. And when she gets to be 14, she still gets pregnant. Goes on welfare, lives in the projects, but she loves Jesus. Well, I mean, you know, how many people after they were converted haven't sinned? You know what I'm saying? Right? But she was living in a context of a dysfunctional culture. And all that stuff is the norm. It's the norm to go get pregnant when you're 14. That's just the way it is. And we used to wonder why that would happen. Oh, they love Jesus. And they come to church, you know. We looked at that. I looked at that. I said, there's something not right about that. All right. Because the problem is we concentrated on getting people converted. Okay? But we didn't do discipleship very well. But if we did do discipleship, it was, you know, knowing how many times Jesus said this or whatever. Right. But what we didn't realize is that, you see, we in our society, we assume that everybody is on the wisdom side. They may be sinful, but they're on the wisdom side. Everybody is functional. And so all we needed a number of years ago was just to get folks saved. Because there wasn't much of a culture of dysfunctionality. That all came about after the war on poverty. Okay, it exploded the stuff, right? And we have not adjusted our approach to ministry based on those realities. And over the years, what began to happen is that there was a general shift toward foolishness. So everybody's foolish. And so what happened is that, yeah, okay, you go from sinful foolishness to righteous foolishness. So the girl, she loves Jesus, but now she's got two kids by two different guys. Well, I just, you know, okay. She doesn't really know much about marriage. So what we have to do, this is where you guys come in. We have to add to that ministry post-conversion discipleship. We have to begin to show that there is a better way of life. You know, that's Rahab, you know. She She was a believer, but running on bad software. They had to update her software. You got it? Okay, and that's what we must do. That's part of the deacon's, that's also part of an elder's work, you know, see? But what do we do when you start on the lower right-hand corner? Well, maybe another report. We used to wonder. Y'all know about the Nation of Islam? You ever heard about that? How could these guys get these people cleaned up and all that and working right and, you know, what? The military did the same thing. Take somebody who was just out of it. They join the military and they get straight. What does the military do? What did the Nation of Islam do? Okay, well, at least what they tried to do. All right? Here's what they did. They did pre-conversion discipleship. They taught people how to live right. The military, they tear you down and then they build you back up with a whole new value system. And that's why, and people were more successful, people who grew up in poverty and dysfunctionality, they go to the military or something and they were changed, they succeeded in life, according to the society's definition of success. Does that make sense? I'm not talking about the biblical definition. Nation of Islam, same kind of way. But what happened with the Nation of Islam is those guys began to live right, but they were still, they were still criminal. Why? Because they were missing something. They were missing the transformative message of the gospel. So sometimes we have to disciple folks first and then bring them to conversion, which gets them from the lower right hand to the upper left. So what we have here, the first was a conversion strategy. We assumed that people were going from the lower right to the upper left, but actually they were going from the lower right to the upper right. But a discipleship strategy accomplishes that for us. And that's where, again, I think you as, and we're talking about hands-on stuff, showing people a better way and all the rest of that. The fundamentals of faithfulness, these are the fundamentals of faithfulness. And we as deacons have the honor of leading the church in fulfilling these fundamentals. And so it's like I said, don't think of it in terms of rearranging the chairs for the Sunday night meeting, okay? And that's quadrants of ministry. Now, let me share with you the value systems and then we'll call it a day. All right. Let me get back here. And anybody got a quick question while I change the thing? Oh yeah, by the way, I wanted to tell you that. We need a situation where you can have your computer up there with you. You know, rig it up, you know. So it's messed up. Okay, well that's fine. As long as it's messed up, as long as it's not a part of the okay. Okay. All right. Let me do this. Oh, no. Oh, there we are. There we are. Okay. All right, y'all. I'm coming. Okay. Okay. Just a couple of things, cultural and theological challenge of diaconal ministry, and then we'll call it a day. Okay. I talk about core concerns, right? Let me tell you what I mean by core concerns. Everybody has core concerns. A concern is a value and or issue. Okay, values are things we live by. Issues are problems we wrestle with. You got it? So a concern would be a value and or issue. And a core concern would be a value and or issue that is life defining and life-defining, let's put it that way, and life-controlling, there you go. We all have life-controlling and life-defining values and issues. And these are the things that, if you get somebody's attention, you can always get somebody's attention when you address their life-controlling and life-defining values and issues. You get somebody's attention real quick. Woman at the well, Jesus got her attention real quick. All right, water, the whole issue of water was a life-defining thing for her because she was alienated from her community and all that. And so, again, this requires listening to folks and finding out how they got here and what they're trying to achieve in life and all that. You can kind of ferret out these things. This is how I came up with the dignity, identity, and significance thing. These are life-defining and life-controlling issues. And values. Okay. Now, there are three kinds of these core concerns. There are cultural core concerns. Let's go back. There are personal core concerns, things like loneliness, anxiety, and fear, right? There are social core concerns. These are things like education, health, family, those kind of things. And then there are cultural core concerns, which tend to be unique among different people groups. Now, personal core concerns, everybody has those. Everybody has pretty much the same ones. Loneliness, anxiety, fear, all that. Imposter syndrome. You ever get the imposter syndrome? Oh boy. I don't care how much you do in life, every now and then I get the imposter syndrome. I shouldn't be here. I'm not qualified to be here. Anyway, that's a big deal. And would you believe it? I got my PhD, but do you know I have academic nightmares to this day? that I missed some class when I was in grade school. And now that nullifies my graduation from grade school, high school, college, seminary. So I had to go back to that little class, and then I forget where the class is, and oh boy, that's terrible. I wake up with a sweat. So there's personal, then there's social, there's cultural. Cultural core concerns tend to be kind of specific to a particular people group. Okay, if I'm a Latino, I'm going to have some cultural core concerns that are kind of unique to Latinos. Now, we in the body of Christ tend not to want to deal with cultural core concerns because we are afraid it's going to divide the body. You know, so what ends up happening is that the only cultural core concerns we address are the dominant cultural core concerns. Does that make sense? But there are other ones that are legitimate. Some are not, but you know, there are other ones that are legitimate. And so, just understand that. And so these things, these three types of core concerns are not isolated, but they're interlocked with each other, you see? Sometimes some core concerns can be in one category, some can be in two, and some can be in three. Now with that in mind, that's the preliminary thing about the core concerns. And the way you gain people's attention in your diaconal ministry is you listen to their story, you try to kind of sense what their values are, what their issues are, and you find out what their life controlling ones. Now, they may not share with you right away. You know, it takes a while sometimes for them to get to that point. If they're confident in the relationship, that they would finally share with you. Be ready to give a biblical answer, and not a trite biblical answer. There is nobody, let me tell you something, nobody has any defense. People do not have a defense against three things. There are three things, the three great weapons that we have, whether we're deacons or not. Nobody has a defense against the prayers of the saints, the love of the saints, and we already know about that. And the third one is the wise application of the Word of God to their core concerns. There is no defense against that. So as we help people and everything, we want to address their core concerns. And it takes time and effort to get there. All right. So with that in mind then, let me give you just a little bit of something and then we're finished about value systems. Remember I talked about achiever values, non-achiever values? Okay, there's three types of value systems that are out there. Okay, and I'll try to read those from here. Okay, if you want this, I'll try to get it to you. I'll get it to you, so you don't have to write this down because we don't have enough time. All right, three basic value systems. Achiever value systems. If you're an achiever, generally you're working in middle class. I should have called that something else. I should have called that the PCA value. He says, no, I'm kidding. Okay. Then the non-achiever value system, usually people who live by non-achiever values are in the underclass, okay? They live by subsistence values, and the anti-achievers, they're the criminals. They live by nihilistic or nihilistic values, okay? So let's contrast them. Achievers put a high value on ambition because hard work yields getting ahead. Sound familiar? All right. But what about non-achievers? It's resignation. Why? Because hard work does not yield getting ahead. Non-achievers oftentimes come from situations where they have no sense of agency. They're defeated and all the rest of that. The criminals, recklessness. Why? Getting over by any means. All right. The achievers, delayed gratification because tomorrow will be better than today. So if you're an achiever, you got a couple thousand dollars and you got a little raggedy car, you're not going to spend that $2,000 on some spinners, right? If you're an achiever, what are you going to do? You're going to put that money into your education. And when you graduate, you can get the Escalade and the spinners. Okay, if you're a non-achiever, it's instant gratification because tomorrow will not be better than today. You get money, what are you going to do? Oh, let's party hardy. Let's blow it, you know? Again, now, if you're going to come and just throw money at it, a non-achiever, guess what's going to happen? It's going to fund the, oh, yeah, I got some money now. You got it? Now, these are not measures of character. Please don't get me wrong. Don't go out here saying that the non-achievers got bad character. I'm not saying that. It's just bad software, okay? This has nothing to do with character. I know non-achievers, a lot of them with good character, okay? The criminals, predatory gratification. Tomorrow will never come. I used to do prison ministry, I know. I talked to these guys. They just figured, again, I'll refer to The Wire. There's a young man on there called Naaman Bryce. And he was in the neighborhood that was where the drug culture was the authority. And one of his teacher asked him, where do you see yourself in 10 years? He said, dead. Okay, he was only about 15. All right. Okay, here we go. Preservation of property for the achievers, a sense of personal ownership. Exploitation of property, no sense of ownership for non-achievers. Okay, destruction of property, anti-owner's ownership. Okay, the criminal would think, you know, he said, oh, wow, look at that iPad. That's my iPad. Now I got to figure out how I'm going to get it. See, he's doing right in his own eyes. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. Time orientation. Planning. An achiever will think of paying the electric bill when it comes in the mail. Okay? Right? Crisis orientation. No planning. A non-achiever will think about paying the electric bill when the electricity gets what? Cut off. Of course. Everybody knows that. Right? All right. Moment gratification. If it feels good, do it. All right. Goal orientation involving planning for the achievers, need orientation, no planning for the non-achievers, and want orientation for the non-achievers. If it feels good, do it. Now, one more thing I'll show you, and I'll send you both of these if you want. All right. One more thing. Because of those different value systems, these categories exist in every people group in America, okay? Now, let me tell you something real funny. In places like Haiti, you don't have many non-achievers. You might have a couple of anti-achievers, but you know, just about everybody in Haiti is an achiever. You know why? There's no safety net, and survival requires achievement. That's right, you know, survival. What did I say? It's survival, yeah. You got to be an achiever to survive. So when Haitians come here, they do pretty well, right? They do better than a lot of folks. Okay, all right. Now, one more thing, and I'll show you. And again, I'll send these things to you. Just get Justin to remind me. So because of these, I'm going to eliminate the criminals now. I'm just talking about the achievers and the non-achievers, okay? Achievers and non-achievers. They have different outlooks. If you're going to do diaconal work, you got to understand the culture of the people you're dealing with, okay? All right. Here's a little chart I put together. How do they view social justice? Achievers will see it as equal opportunity. Non-achievers will see it as equal outcomes. And by the way, these different views are not all right and not all wrong. You know, the achiever, not all the achievers' views are all right. Not all the non-achievers' views are all wrong. Sometimes they're both right in some ways, you know. But I'm just saying this, they're different. They're different. Barriers to success, mostly internal, almost exclusively external. One of the things about non-achievers is that they have no sense of agency. They feel powerless. Achievers tend to have a sense of agency. You got to understand that. That's why empowerment is a very important thing. Basis of success, actions of self versus actions of others. Effective values on the poor. Non-achiever values hinder them, say the achievers. Look at this. Achiever values oppress them. You're gonna get some pushback if you try to bring them from non-achieverism to achieverism, but you gotta make it enticing that they wanna go. Self-sabotaging behavior is acting irresponsibly versus it's the fault of society. Different outlook. Just understand this. If you can understand these things, then you'll be way ahead of the game. Effective civilization. It humanizes, say, the achievers. It dehumanizes, say, the non-achievers. Relationship to the social situation. Self is independent of it, sense of agency, versus self is determined by it. You got it? Posture towards society, contribute to it, say the achievers, critique it, say the non-achievers. Unacceptable behavior, criminal behavior is wrong, say the achievers. Look at this, civilized behavior is false. I've heard a number of non-achievers tell me, I'm trying to keep it real. Real compared to what? Compared to non-achieverism. It's not measures of character, it's his outlook. All right? How to gain respect, earn it versus demand it. And then finally here, final panel, responsibility, personal versus institutional, motivation, personal initiative versus institutional compensation. Non-achievers will think, well, you know, you pay me, I'll do it, you know, etc. Self-destructive behavior, simply destructive, say the achievers. Reflection of oppression, say the non-achievers. And there's a point there. You know, it can be a reflection of oppression, okay? And then finally, who must change? The individual, say the non-achievers. The society, say the achievers. I mean, this is the individual says the achievers. The society says the non-achievers. So outlooks, we have different outlooks. And so just know that. Know that. And so when we, the situation we encounter as deacons today is much more complicated than it was in the book of Acts. The book of Acts, first century Palestine, was more like Haiti. But in the Western world, in America, we got all this safety net and all this government stuff, and it's a wonderful thing to have a safety net. It's a great thing, but it hasn't been thought through very well because the government operates on a philosophy that is a failure. And we as a church have got to be a discipleship to the whole society. And the diaconal ministry is a very, very important part of that. So I'm finished. Let's open, close in a word of prayer, shall we? Thank you, Lord, for this time together. And I pray that you will make us deacons after your own heart, that we might bring you glory. In Jesus' name, amen. Thank you.